This is the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour here on KMEC 105.1 FM in Ukiah, here at the Mendocino Environmental Center. I'm Christina Onnested, co-publisher of the Mendocino Country Independent, with my colleague Annie Esposito. Today we're going to be talking about the Board of Supervisors meeting tomorrow and the proposal to change the county's medical marijuana permitting program, the 9.31 program. County Council is proposing to roll back the numbers and shift some of the aspects of the 9.31 program. We're going to be joined with Supervisor John McCowan, who represents the Ukiah Valley, on the County Supervisors Board. And he'll be discussing what some of those changes are, what his response is, and what's behind this move. And what is behind this move is a federal crackdown on medical marijuana throughout the state of California. And apparently, rumor has it, there's been a letter that's been sent to the county saying what they're doing is illegal by allowing the permitting and regulating of people to grow up to 99 plants per parcel of medical marijuana. So we're going to talk with John McCowan, and we're going to talk with one of the 9.31 participants a little later today, between the hours of 5 and 6 tonight. And he says it might be time for people in the community to support and finance a defense fund for the county to resist the federal crackdown. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that and some other things. And first, let's go into some news here. What we've got is the International World Report, available through the Pacifica Network, and we're going to go into that. We're going to play that, and then we'll be back with some local news.
...who placed an embargo on Iran's oil exports Monday, as well as financial sanctions over Tehran's alleged nuclear weapons program. Iran had earlier warned it would close the Strait of Hormuz, through which a fifth of the world's oil is transported daily, if the EU imposed an embargo. Five people were killed Monday when government forces and defectors clashed in Homs, Syria. Sudanese General Mohammed al-Darbi, head of the Arab League observers in Syria, rejected criticism that his team had failed to stop the killing. Thousands of people have died in the uprising against President Bashar al-Assad. Syria also rejected an Arab League proposal for Assad to step down and for formation of a unity government. A new study in the International Journal of Cancer shows children living near nuclear power plants face excess risk of acute leukemia. The study found childhood leukemia between 2002 and 2007 doubled among children under 5 living within 3 miles of nuclear plants. The findings arrived at the same conclusion as a German study in 2008. Radioactive sludge at a treatment plant under construction in Hanford, Washington, is so dangerous that a few hours' exposure would be fatal. The plant is being built to deal with 56 million gallons of waste left from 50 years of nuclear weapons production. The cleanup is the most complex and costly environmental restoration ever attempted. A major leak could contaminate water supplies serving millions across the Northwest. A recent USA Today investigation found the 10-year effort to build the plant faces enormous problems as it reaches what was supposed to be its final stage. Senior engineers raise concerns of a possible hydrogen explosion or uncontrolled nuclear reaction inside the plant. The $12.3 billion price tag, already triple original estimates, is well short of what it will cost to finish the project. And the plant's start-up date, already pushed back to 2019, is certain to slip further. The UK Times reported Sunday Israeli officials told Joint Chief of Staff General Martin Dempsey Israel would give Barack Obama no more than 12 hours' notice if and when it attacked Iran. The Times said its sources explained Israel fears Obama would try to torpedo an Israeli attack if more notice were given, because he's concerned Iran would respond by blocking the Strait of Hormuz, sparking a rise in oil prices that could cripple Western economies. General Dempsey played down the postponement of what was billed as the largest ever joint military drill between the Israeli and U.S. armies, involving thousands of U.S. Army soldiers. Official reasons for the delay have ranged from budgetary constraints, logistical problems, to a signal from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that he distrusts Obama's commitment to stop Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon.
For more details on these stories, visit innworldreport.net. This news brief brought to you by the International News Net.
162 people were killed Friday in bombings and gun battles in Kano, Nigeria's second largest city. A spokesman for the Islamist group Boko Haram said the attacks were in response to authorities' refusal to release its members in custody. 20 blasts reverberated across the city, targeting police offices, a secret police building, and immigration offices. Mitt Romney agreed Saturday to publish his tax returns after losing to Newt Gingrich in South Carolina's Republican primary. ABC News disclosed last week Romney has millions of dollars stashed in tax havens in the Cayman Islands. Romney admitted last week his tax rate was 15%, far lower than for most Americans. Romney warned Gingrich, "Those who pick up the weapons of the left today will find them turned against them tomorrow." A judge has ordered Barack Obama to appear in court in Atlanta Thursday for a hearing on a complaint that says Obama cannot be president because he isn't a natural-born citizen. The complaint is intended to keep Obama's name off the state's ballot in the March presidential primary. Andrew Adler, owner of a Jewish newspaper in Atlanta, has said he deeply regrets writing a column suggesting that Israel consider a hit on Barack Obama if he stands in the way of Israel defending itself. Adler told the UK Guardian he wrote the column in the Atlanta Jewish Times to get a reaction from readers. The column asked readers to imagine they are the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu confronting the threat posed by Hezbollah and Iran's nuclear program while also under pressure from a U.S. president with an Alice in Wonderland belief in diplomacy. Tens of thousands of Yemenis protested Sunday in Sana'a's Change Square, epicenter of the democracy movement, against a law giving President Ali Abdullah Saleh immunity from prosecution over his harsh crackdown on dissent. Yemen's parliament Saturday adopted a law giving Saleh complete immunity from prosecution in return from stepping down in February under a Gulf-brokered transition deal. The law also offers protection for Saleh's aides for actions that were politically motivated and carried out in the exercise of their duties. Saleh has ruled Yemen with an iron fist for 33 years. After 9/11, he became an ally of the U.S.'s war on terror. The U.S. has continued to launch drone strikes in Yemen and has provided the Saleh regime with military aid during the uprising. The State Department announced Sunday it has granted Saleh a visa to seek medical treatment in the U.S.
For more details on these stories, visit innworldreport.net.
At the Massachusetts State Prison in Concord, 1,345 men are crammed into space designed for a maximum of 614. And at the awaiting trial unit at the Women's Prison in Framingham, 215 women are locked up in space designed for 64. That's 330% of capacity. And the legislature's solution to all this is what? I'm Bill Newman, and this is the Civil Liberties Minute. The Massachusetts legislature is on the verge of passing a bill that will lock up thousands of more people at a cost of hundreds of millions of dollars. It plans to do this by passing a law, a three strikes and you're out criminal sentencing bill. It's a bad bill. The Senate version includes as a strike any sentence where a person has been sent to jail for as little as one day. Other states are moving ahead with carefully researched plans and strategies to reduce incarceration. Ohio, South Carolina, Georgia, Kentucky, Louisiana, and Mississippi, to name a few. But allegedly liberal Massachusetts? Not here. Does Massachusetts provide adequate money for drug treatment or rehabilitation or counseling or effective parole services or for reentry programs? The answers? No, 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 and no. With the result that Massachusetts is now poised to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars on prisons and $50,000 per year per prisoner to keep them full. The Civil Liberties Minute is brought to you by the ACLU, because freedom can't protect itself.
That was just the American Civil Liberties Minute, brought to you from the Pacifica Network, of which KMEC and the Mendocino Environmental Center is a sister station too. And when you become a member of the MEC, you support programming like the Civil Liberties Minute, International Network News, and shows like the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour, where we talk about local issues. So I want to let you know the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour is supported by the Mendo Lake Credit Union at 526 South State Street in Ukiah. They're open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and you can reach them at 707-468-0161 or find them online at www.mlcu.org. All right, we've got John McCowan in the studios here, Second District Supervisor for Mendocino County, and we're going to be discussing the proposed changes to Mendocino County's 9.31 medical marijuana permitting program, which is basically essentially the first program in the nation to regulate the production of medical marijuana. And there are some proposed changes to that. Tomorrow, the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors will be discussing those proposed changes. And we're going to talk with John about that. First, we're going to take a little music break while we get him ready to answer your questions. The number to call is 468-9800. Again, that's 468-9800. If you have any questions, and we'll be giving that number out a little later in the hour as well. But first, let's take a little musical break here. And we've got Peter Tosh. The name of this song is, you guessed it, Legalize It. We'll be back in a minute.
Legalize it, yeah, yeah. I will advertise it. Some call it tamping. Some call it the weed. Marijuana. Some of them call it ganja. Never mind, legalize it. Don't you ever criticize. Legalize it, yeah. Yeah, I man will advertise it. Singers smoke it, and the players of instruments too. Legalize it, yeah, yeah. That's the best thing you can do. Doctors smoking, nurses smoking, judges smoking, my lawyer too. So you got to legalize. Don't you criticize. You better legalize it. Yeah, yeah. I man will advertise it.
Yes, and the federal government has come out and said that they will crack down on any businesses that support medical marijuana in the state of California, whether it's in advertising, as Peter Tosh just described. And the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour is a publication that has advertisements for medical marijuana collectives, cooperative dispensaries here in Mendocino County. And in the studios with us to talk about this particular issue is John McCowan, Second District Supervisor. Good evening, John. Thanks for being with us.
Good evening. Thank you.
So, 9.31. Could you tell our listeners, in case someone's just tuning in, maybe they're driving by on the freeway, what is 9.31?
Mendocino County adopted a marijuana cultivation ordinance in 2008, about a year before I came on the board. It had a 25 plant per parcel limit. It had setbacks from churches and schools, but it had few other protections for the community. And most of the people in the marijuana community felt that it was far too restrictive. So no one liked the ordinance. It didn't really resolve any problems. After a lengthy committee process in 2010, the board adopted amendments to that ordinance that added additional protections for neighbors, such as setbacks from property lines, occupied residences, and also provided the opportunity for people to apply to the sheriff for a permit to grow up to 99 plants per parcel, as long as they were in compliance with a long list of conditions, including an inspection from the sheriff, and there was a minimum parcel size. So the way the program has worked out has been very successful. Where marijuana had been an extremely controversial issue, where there was complete polarization on the issue within the community, within the Board of Supervisors, we moved to a position where...
With law enforcement as well?
Law enforcement, absolutely. And so the way the program played out once it actually was put into place was to bridge a lot of those gaps. And it, the applicants who became part of the program really felt that they were rejoining the community in the sense that they could step forward, say who they were, what they did, that they were in full compliance with state and local law. They were making the same employee deductions as anyone else, and they really felt part of society again.
Well, if I can chime in real fast, one of the interesting things I found about the 9.31 program is the regulations. I mean, some of the regulations are more stringent for medical marijuana growers than for vineyards. There's a focus on erosion control, and which, of course, vineyards have as well. And this regulation process was fairly holistic, to say.
That was the intention.
And it also moved it up from 25 plants up to 99, correct?
Correct. But
the 9.31 program.
But the people who were getting the permits to grow 99 were the ones that had to comply with this higher level of environmental awareness and supervision.
And the trade-off is that in return, they would not face prosecution from local law enforcement.
Correct. It made it very clear to the sheriff that these are the people that are complying with our regulations. They've been inspected. We know they're not illegally diverting water and creating other environmental problems or community problems. And I've maintained all along that the people that are going to apply for these permits are not the people that are going to be creating problems. And with very few exceptions, that's been the truth. You know, so it has been a successful program.
The first in the country, really.
Well, I think so. Certainly the most advanced that I'm aware of anywhere in the country. And in fact, I believe it really is a model. And it's not perfect. It's a work in progress. And we were open to further amending it as we go forward. And it's very difficult in an environment where you have federal prohibition that says not one seed is legal. And yet California recognizes the legality of medical marijuana. It's very difficult to craft a comprehensive regulation, but I think we did the best job that we could, again, acknowledging there's room for improvement. But I think it is a model of what a regulated, legalized, above-ground marijuana economy could look like. And I think, in part, that's very threatening to the federal government. They would like, apparently, they would like to drive it all back underground, which I maintain will make it more illegal, more dangerous, and more profitable to the black marketeers.
Well, let's talk about the economic benefits of having an above-ground regulated medical marijuana industry. What last year, it's basically 9.31, it's been around for 2 years. Last year was the full tilt and boogie of it, so to speak. What were the economic benefits that the county, the sheriff's department saw from 9.31?
Well, and again, the economic benefits, and people focus on that and the permit fees, that to me was never the intention of the program, and yet it's undeniable that it did result in additional revenue to the sheriff's office, which was very welcome by the sheriff. But really,
considering they haven't had a pay increase since like the 70s, or they have the same amount of deputies they had when Nixon was in office, is that right?
Well,
I've heard Tom say that before.
No, that's true. The staffing has not kept pace with the population increase, nor the increase in crimes and the complexity of some of the issues that people face these days in terms of law enforcement. But to me, the real cost savings has been that we have created a bright line where we have clearly told law enforcement, here is a category of people that you don't really have to be concerned with any longer. And also, here are the people who don't have permits but are complying with the 25 plants or fewer per parcel and the other conditions that are imposed. So we don't really need to worry about those. If a neighborhood complaint comes in, it can be checked out to see if those growers are in compliance with the setbacks and so forth. But it's really taken the controversy, for the most part, out of the neighborhoods, and we now have clear guidance to law enforcement so that the sheriff's office doesn't have to be out there arresting everybody who has a few marijuana plants. The DA doesn't have to be prosecuting them. We don't have the public defender, probation involved. And I think that's where the real savings to the community has been, as well as the fact that it did work in many ways to bring the community back together. And so there's a lot of intangible benefits that we realized.
Okay. So you have no specific numbers on the, I thought it was like maybe $300,000, half a million dollars it brought in last year. No?
The number I've heard is around $500,000 to $600,000.
Okay, half a million. Mm-hmm. So in a few minutes, we're going to be calling, we're going to hear from a participant in the program. But before we go there, the feds came in October. The feds announced statewide crackdown on the medical marijuana industry in California. And I understand that the county received a letter saying your program's illegal.
Well, once again, Mendocino County is unique. We did not receive a letter.
Ah.
We received a personal visit from representatives, plural, of the United States Federal Attorney's Office in California. They took time out of their busy schedule to drive up to Mendocino County on January 3rd, had a personal meeting with County Counsel Janine Nadel, and basically informed her that they had concerns with the Mendocino County 9.31 program and that they expected the county to make changes to the program to address their concerns.
All right. Were any of the Board of Supervisors present during this meeting, or was this specifically between federal authorities and county council?
Federal authorities and county council. And county council has not talked publicly about the details of that conversation. I believe she's invoked attorney-client privilege. However, the board did then consider the federal concerns in closed session on January 10th and gave direction to county council to prepare amendments to the 931 ordinance intended to address the PAC decision and also the federal threat. So I think it's safe to assume that the recommendations for the amendments that are being presented are probably in line with what county council believes is necessary to respond to the federal concerns.
Yes. And the very next day, the Mendocino County issued a press release on January 11th saying that they're going to review the 9.31 ordinance, and your response was quoted as, "If the federal government is not going to provide the resources to eradicate all the marijuana they consider illegal, then they should not interfere with local regulatory efforts to protect public safety and the environment."
Sounds like something I would say.
Yes. Can you elaborate?
Well, I certainly can. I maintain that our program, our ordinance, does protect public safety and the environment. And if you go back to a completely unregulated environment, which is what we had 3 or 4 years ago, you're going to have a lot more neighborhood conflict, and you're not going to have any clear method of resolving those neighborhood conflicts. I don't think that is going to be a step in the right direction. I also really believe that this is just another example of the failure of the federal government to address the real issues that are going on here. You know, again, if they think they can eradicate all the marijuana that they think is illegal, and that's all the marijuana that there is, they don't have enough resources to even begin to do that. So instead, what we see is kind of a head-in-the-sand attitude where the federal government is not paying attention to reality. They are continuing to perpetuate the war on drugs in our communities, and especially when it comes to marijuana. What this really does is squanders public money, it endangers our communities, it corrupts the criminal justice system, and it enriches outlaw drug trafficking organizations. I hate to think that that is the intention of the federal government, but that, I believe, is the effect of driving medical marijuana back underground.
All right, John, thank you for that comment. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back. It's 5:30. You're listening to KMEC 105.1 FM, the Mendocino Environmental Center here in the Ukiah Valley. And in the studios with me is Second District Supervisor John McCowan. And we're talking about the County Board of Supervisors meeting tomorrow, where they'll be discussing changing some of the regulations in the 9.31 ordinance. The biggest one would be the amount grown from 99 plants per parcel to 25. So we're going to talk a little more about that. But first, we're going to take a musical break, and we're going to talk with one of the participants in the 9.31 program who says it might just be time to start a defense fund for the county against the feds. So we'll see what he has to say, and I'd love to know your response. And we're going to go back to a little Peter Tosh with Legalize It, and then we'll be right back.
Yeah, yeah, that's the best thing you can do. Doctors smoking, nurses smoking, churches smoking. My lawyer too. So you got to legalize. Don't you criticize. You better legalize it. Yeah, yeah. I man will advertise it. It's good for the flu. It's good for asthma. Good for tuberculosis. And it even cures glaucoma. So you better legalize. Make it free for I smoking. Don't want to be abused for it.
in this your time. Bird seated, ants love it.
Peter Tosh with Legalize It. You're listening to the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour. I'm Christina Onnestad, host, co-host, and co-publisher of the Mendocino Country Independent with my colleague Annie Esposito. Today we're talking about Mendocino County's pioneer program, POT Medical Marijuana Regulation Program 9.31, with 2nd District Supervisor John McCowan. And on the line with us is Nick. He's a 9.31 participant. Nick, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, thanks for calling. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, no problem. My pleasure.
Could you talk a little bit louder into the telephone?
Sure. Is this better?
It's slightly better. This is about as good as it's going to get. So let's move ahead. Nick, you're a 9.31 participant. And why did you choose to come out of the shadows and say, I am a medical marijuana producer, I'm a medical marijuana grower, and I want to work with the establishing laws and regulations?
Well, you know, when the program first developed 2 seasons ago, I was one of the very first people to apply for the program, and I'd have to admit I was a little bit hesitant, a little bit nervous, because it's just, the past is hard to, hard to break away from that. But I feel like it's time we make progress as, medical marijuana providers and medical marijuana patients. And this program was the perfect way to bring the legality of medical marijuana and this industry into the future. So I feel like that's probably why most people joined,
Yes.
This has been a legitimate industry in this county for a long time, and a lot of us have been doing medical marijuana for a long time and see the great benefits it brings to the patients and as well as the community. So it was due time for something like this to be initiated.
Okay. And now the feds have come in. They've said, Mendocino County, you need to rewrite your program because we find it problematic, and you need to lower the amount that you think is okay for people to grow, and et cetera. You've said maybe it's time to finance a defense fund for Mendocino County. Can you tell us a little more? Where are you coming from when you say that, too?
Well, the way I think of it is that, we should all be in this together. And, if the county's going to go up to bat and support this program, I feel like the people in the program should unite with the county and, help them in any way possible in the future if they hit some kind of bump in the road, Kind of, care for the people that care for you.
Yes, okay. Care for the people that care for you. John, what is your response? Does Mendocino County need a legal defense fund? Do you support the changes the federal government wants Mendocino County to make?
First of all, I want to say, Nick, thank you very much for stepping forward and being one of the people who made this program work. It's really been a wonderful experience, I think, for nearly everyone involved to find out that despite everyone's kind of nervousness, I think, when it began, because I don't think the sheriff sergeant felt any more comfortable the first day that he stepped into somebody's garden than they felt. But we really have proven that we could all work together to comply with the law, protect public safety and the environment, and it required people like you being willing to step forward to do that. So, again, thank you. In terms of a legal defense fund, the federal government has unlimited resources to bring to bear in any contest that we get into with them. They also clearly have federal law on their side that says no amount of marijuana is legal under any circumstances. So although I think we have a righteous position in terms of federal law, and the contest would be in a federal court, and given even, you know, the offer of the defense fund is, you know, very generous, and I appreciate that, but it's not merely the cost of defending a case against the federal government. It's also the consequences that the county might be exposed to if the county were to lose. So I think...
What kind of consequences do you fear the county would be subject to, or do you know the county would be subject to?
Well, I don't fear, but I think, again, the federal government has unlimited resources. So probably initially they would start with a civil suit seeking an injunction to try and shut the program down. But in terms of how they would pursue that, there has been speculation, and this is not based on anything that they've said directly to county authorities, but there has been speculation by other people who believe they have some information about the federal approach, that there could be a raid on the sheriff's office, for instance, to seek evidence. And I think it's a little unpredictable exactly where the federal government might go with it, but I don't know what the legal basis would be under federal law for the county to resist. So therefore, as much as I am opposed to dismantling a successful program that I put a lot of time into helping shape along with the help of the community.
That you were instrumental in really crafting.
Well, and again, working with the community, because
working with growers.
I worked hard to build bridges with the medical marijuana community, and I succeeded in building those bridges with a lot of people, and they became willing to provide the input that helped make the ordinance viable. So it was a great partnership, and I think once it went into effect, even people that had a lot of doubts, for the most part, were won over. So I really hate to step away from this very successful program that we all invested a lot of time in. And yet, with the federal threat, I don't see that it's viable to continue at this time. So,
Nick.
Yeah.
What's your response?
Well, I would like to see the program carry forward. It needs some changes, First of all, probably we need to take away the applications, take away the permits, and make everything voluntary. I think the people involved in the program should still purchase the zip ties, or people who are volunteering to comply with the ordinance should still purchase the zip ties at $50, which will generate funds that the county greatly needs. And I believe that people should still, give $1,500 to the Sheriff's Department so that they have some funds to fight real criminals out there. If the federal government wants to spend money, they should spend money not prosecuting people who are in full compliance and doing things by the book to help people, but they should go after real criminals, like the people who are decimating our national forest, polluting our environment, and breeding real crime, instead of going after people that are compassionate and providing a means to help people with illness.
All right. Thank you, Nick.
And I agree completely with that statement, but that's not the path the federal government has chosen to go down.
John, I have a question for you. Should the county decide to go up against the feds, could this potentially be a case that could end prohibition? I mean, could this issue be brought before the Supreme Court?
5 years and $2.5 million later, yeah, we might get there. But remember that the Raich versus Gonzalez, which went to the federal Supreme Court, was decided unanimously against Angel Raich. And basically the contention was that she had caregivers that were growing medical marijuana in California specifically for her. No money was changing hands, and yet the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that that marijuana that was produced for a specific individual never crossed state lines, was never sold, nevertheless implicated interstate commerce, and therefore was subject to regulation under the Controlled Substances Act. That doesn't seem to leave a lot of leeway for a program like the 931 program to win favor at the federal Supreme Court, particularly given the overly conservative nature of at least half of the justices that are there.
Okay. Nick, thank you for joining us, and I want you to hang on and stick with us a little bit as we shift the focus slightly on the 9.31 program. All this information given, Board of Supervisors are going to meet tomorrow morning, and they're going to discuss the proposed changes to the 9.31 program, which I think the most poignant one that sticks out in my mind is the amount of growing it at under the 9.31 as it exists today. It's 99 plants per parcel of medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. There are other regulations around that, as well as you said, soil erosion, pollution, water diversions. The biggest shift is the number. Janine Nadel, Mendocino County Council, is proposing that number be back to 25. And is this a resurgence of Measure G? Measure G, for those who are listening, was a measure that I think it was allowed 25 plants of marijuana that could, medical marijuana that could be cultivated. And that was a measure you heavily campaigned, successfully campaigned, to repeal. And now County Council wants to, then you develop this 99 plant. Now County Council wants to go back to 25. John, what do you think?
It's a complicated issue, isn't it? So, yes. First of all, I want to say that I think really the biggest change is the elimination of the permit program.
Ah.
And then the second biggest change is the number, because I believe it would be possible to eliminate the permit program and the application and the fees and all of that.
So it takes out the third-party inspector, essentially.
Well, it takes out primarily the sheriff's direct involvement in the program. So you could eliminate that, no permit, no application, no permit fee, and you could still leave the number at 99 for parcels 10 acres and up, which was a requirement, or you could even bump that up to 20 acres maybe if people thought that was more reasonable. So I think the key thing is elimination of the permits. But
well, it allows the zip ties to still exist, but it makes it more voluntary. It doesn't totally eliminate the program.
It makes it voluntary.
And
County Council, her recommended changes would preserve the ability of people on a voluntary basis to come forward and purchase zip ties, so they would still be able to demonstrate that they were doing everything that they could within the local law to show that they were being completely legal, or as legal as they could be.
Which is something Nick just said he would support as well.
Right. So depending on what the board does tomorrow, there will still be the opportunity to purchase zip ties, but we'll see where the board comes down on the number of plants. And before I answer the Measure G question, I want to say people should be aware that we have people in the community, including people who were never supportive of the 9.31 program. They didn't support the original ordinance. They didn't support the amendments to the ordinance. They haven't supported the zip ties. And so some of those folks are going to come forward tomorrow and say Mendocino County should completely repeal the 9.31 ordinance, and then there would be no local law. I think so. People should be concerned about that possibility. I think it makes sense to keep the law in place. I think there's still a lot of good things there, and it does preserve a framework that maybe a year from now the climate changes. We might get some different direction from the federal government after the election. So I think we preserve the framework of the ordinance. We can come back and revisit all of these issues when the climate may be more favorable.
Like when Ron Paul wins the election.
Absolutely.
Not
to the Measure G question, I think there's been a lot of confusion over what Measure G actually did and what it was intended to do.
And just to let people know, because this is the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour, Measure G was written by the founder of the Mendocino Country Independent, Richard Johnson, who passed away last March.
Absolutely. He was the principal author, probably the principal signature gatherer to put the initiative on the ballot. And what Measure G provided was that the prosecution of any violations of the state health and safety code sections that made marijuana illegal would be the lowest priority for the county in any single case involving 25 or fewer adult flowering female marijuana plants, or the equivalent in dried marijuana. So it wasn't 25 plants per person. It also wasn't tied to medical use. It included personal use. But it was 25 plants in any single case. So if the sheriff showed up at your homestead and there were 50 plants in the garden, even though there might have been two or four medical marijuana patients residing there, that was not in compliance with Measure G. Another major problem with Measure G was that it sought to direct what the sheriff and the district attorney could do, which cannot be done by an initiative. They're both independent, constitutionally elected officers of the state, and not even the Board of Supervisors can tell them how to conduct their business in enforcing their offices. The other major problem with Measure G was unconstitutional from the start because it attempted to supersede an area of the law that was fully occupied by the state government. And we found that out during the Measure B campaign, or rather after the Measure B campaign, which did repeal Measure G. There was an effort to refile Measure G to put it back on the ballot. County Council refused to write a ballot title and summary on the grounds that it was unconstitutional. It went through a court challenge, and the courts ruled in favor of the county that it was unconstitutional under state law. So Measure G was a good philosophical statement. Nobody challenged it at the time. It got a lot of currency for a few years. But I don't see it being, other than the number 25, I don't see it being analogous to our permit program.
Okay. Nick, what do you think about the Mendocino County moving the numbers down from 9.3 program to 25 plants per parcel?
You know, I think it's greatly going to limit, lawfully, compliantly and safely produce medicine for a lot of the dispensaries that are depending on the people who participate in programs like 9.31, and all it's really going to do is harm people in the community and other patients throughout the state that are depending on safe access to their medicine.
So are you saying the number's too...
I believe it'll drive up the crime rates,
Are you saying the number's too low? 25 is too low of a number?
I think it's, it's acceptable, but I believe, that I think 99 plants should stand. And, the people who are doing this in the community, the participants in the program, have opened their doors to, countless inspections and walkthroughs of their property, their homes, their buildings, to the sheriff's department, have nothing to hide, and for the most part these people are outstanding members of the community and just honestly good people who want to take advantage of the situation they're in this area to be able to help others, and that's a good thing. I think that if it gets reduced down to 25, it's just going to push, the black market type producers, people like the cartels and stuff like that, it'll will just increase their production to close that gap of stuff available, and it'll, you know, all those people do. None of that goes to help. Almost, I'd say less than 1% of the stuff produced by criminal organizations is going to ever make its way to helping the patients. You know, those are truly the people that are responsible for crime and interstate trafficking. And it's not, you know, mom and pop people who are helping out, you know, patients in their own state. And, you know, these laws were passed by people in the state to help the patients of this state. And if you're burying a program that's in the light and in the open where everything's lawfully produced, all you're going to do is increase, you know, black market and criminal organization. It's going to create an appeal for appealing to them to, you know, up their production. I think the Fed should focus more on, rather than coming after, you know, innocent law-abiding citizens, they should focus their efforts on really cleaning up the national forest, cleaning up these criminal enterprises and mafia-type organizations that are doing the real, real damage out there. You know, these are the people that are stripping the forest and ruining the rivers and polluting. And that's really what they need to do is focus their energy on that. And, I think they're really mistaken on where they're applying their efforts. I'd like to see more of that going on and, you know, less harassment of people who are, you know, obviously law-abiding and willing to step forward and take the process to bring this thing into the limelight as a legitimate industry, as part of a medical industry that's clearly helping millions of people.
A legitimate industry. Nick, thank you so much for joining us on KMEC 105.1 FM here in Ukiah, the Mendocino Environmental Center, on the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour. We're going to end our interview with you. We've got about 10 minutes left.
If I could say one more thing before,
yes.
Before I'm done.
Please.
I'd like to urge anyone that's been in the program or anyone that's thinking about, participating in a program like this, please come to the Board of Supervisors meeting tomorrow on Low Gap Road there at the county building and, say what you have to say. Please, dress nicely and come with, with a good attitude and say things that make sense, Voice your opinions and, because if you don't speak, you won't be heard and, this is not a time for people to take the back seat and watch how this thing rides out. You know, it's time to get behind the wheel and steer this thing in the direction that we all know it should go.
All right. Thank you, Nick, for joining us. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. If you don't speak, you won't be heard. John, what time is this discussion going to take place?
It's scheduled to start at 10 a.m.
Okay. 10 a.m. The Mendocino County Board of Supervisors will be discussing the proposed changes to the 9.31 ordinance. What happens if it's voted down? What happens if the Board of Supervisors don't get enough support, if not all the supervisors agree on the changes? Will 9.31 stand?
Well, we'll find out tomorrow. We'll see what direction the board does want to go in. Theoretically, the board could decide not to make the changes, but again, then we'll be dealing with the federal government and see what they want to do. The board could make the changes as recommended. They could modify them, and I think there's certainly some room for modifying what has been recommended. Or, as has been suggested, the board could give direction to eliminate the program. That could not be done tomorrow based on the way that it was placed on the agenda. But the board, if it chose, if there were three votes, could take action to, or could give direction to county council to come back with an ordinance repealing the current ordinance in its entirety. Again, I don't think that would be wise, so we might disagree on exactly what changes should be made or should there be any changes at all. But I hope that the great majority of the people will be able to agree that we should try to keep the ordinance in place as much as we can, keep the framework of it there so that we do have an opportunity in the future to come back and rebuild the program when it looks like that is feasible.
So what will the impacts be if the program is eliminated? Then what kind of direction does law enforcement have around medical marijuana? Would it just be state law, six plants per parcel?
Well, state law is not six plants per parcel. It's six plants per patient, except that they
Thank
can
you.
Also say, gee, based on my current medical condition, I really need this much. And I think we're back very clearly to the card stacking, which is when things really got blown out of proportion here, when people were using dozens of medical marijuana recommendations, sometimes Xeroxed off.
To justify growing 72, 86, 94 plants.
1,200.
1,200 plants.
Is the biggest number I heard, and the deputies come out in response to a complaint, and they count up the recommendations, and they say, well, gosh, I guess this is okay.
John, last question. We got 3 minutes left. 25 plants. Some people on the supervisor's board support just only 25 plants. They just want to see mom and pa growers. Anything larger is more than that. What do you think?
Well, that's in line with county council recommendation, and given the federal concern, maybe that's a very reasonable place to wind up. Again, I think that it's consistent with state law to eliminate the permits and keep the 99 plants on a larger acreage. We found out that people can grow larger amounts of marijuana in complete compliance with environmental laws and community concerns. And it's been a successful program. But again, we're under the federal microscope right now. So we'll just have to wait and see where the board lands tomorrow.
All right, John, thank you so much for joining us on KMEC in the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour. This is an issue we're going to be following and we're going to be writing about in our February edition, which will be out in about a week. So people who want to know more can look for our paper in about a week. And stay tuned to KMEC Mondays, 5 to 6, where we bring you the up-to-date stuff that's going on in our county.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you to John and thank you to Nick for joining us tonight for this stimulating conversation. We're going to leave you with Peter Tosh once again. Legalize It. Thank you for listening. Up next is some New Orleans lovely music with Reverend Jim. And I want to remind you that the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour has been underwritten by the Mendo Lake Credit Union. We appreciate their support. If you or your business would like to join them on KMEC, give us a call. 468-1660.
Don't criticize. Legalize it, yeah, yeah. I will advertise it. Some call it Tampa. Some call it the weed. Some call it marijuana. Some of them call it ganja. Never mind, legalize.